reading from the book of Joshua. The Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have removed the reproach of Egypt from you." While the Israelites were encamped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, they celebrated the Passover on the evening of the 14th of the month. On the day after the Passover, they ate of the produce of the land in the form of unleavened cakes and parched grain. On that same day, after the Passover, on which they ate of the produce of the land, the manna ceased. No longer was there manna for the Israelites, who that year ate of the yield of the land of Canaan. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
A reading from the second letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, whoever is in Christ is a new creation. The old things have passed away. Behold, new things have come. And all this is from God, who has reconciled us to himself through Christ and given us the ministry of reconciliation. Namely, God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting to us the message of reconciliation. So we are ambassadors for Christ, as if God were appealing through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. For our sake, he made him to be sin who did not know sin, so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Collectors and sinners were all drawing near to listen to Jesus. But the Pharisees and the scribes began to complain, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So to them, Jesus addressed this parable. A man had two sons, and the younger son said to the father, "Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me." So the father divided the property between them. And after a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. And when he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck that country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend the swine. And he longed to eat the fill of the pods on which his swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, "How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat? But here I am dying of hunger. I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as you would treat one of your hired workers.' But then he got up and went back to his father. While he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him, and he was filled with compassion. He ran to his son and embraced him and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But his father ordered his servants, 'Quickly, put on the finest robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fattened calf and slaughter it. And then let us celebrate with a feast, because this son of mine who was dead has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. Then the celebration began. Now the older son, who had been out in the field and on his way back, as he neared the house, he heard the sound of music and dancing. He called out to one of his servants and asked what this might mean. And the servant said to him, "Your master has returned, and to your father, and has slaughtered the fattened calf, because he has him back safe and sound." He became angry, and when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. And he said to his father in reply, "Look, all these years I have served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast on with my friends. But when this son of yours returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughter the fattened calf." He said to him, "My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But when now we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found." The Gospel of the Lord. My dear friends, I want to thank, first of all, Father Whitmer, who celebrated Mass for me last week while I was away. And there's a promise that I'm going to give to you, that on Palm Sunday, I'm going to share with you the talk, the reflection that I gave to Holy Resurrection Church in Euclid, because Palm Sunday is the perfect time for it. Now, I know Pope Francis has said to the priests, and I agree with him with this, not to talk too long in your homilies, not to have a long homily. And on Palm Sunday is always the long gospel that we hear, on preparing for Jesus' passion. And so what I want to talk about on that Palm Sunday, plain and simple, is just on how we look at the cross through the eyes of various saints, like Saint Simon, Saint Helena, Saint Mary Magdalene, Saint Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, and St. Mary of Egypt. And I'm probably going to try and do that, if I can, hopefully in 10 minutes time. We'll be able to do it. I think I'll be able to do it, because that's how we were able to do it at Holy Resurrection. Before I start my homily today, very briefly today, I just want to share with you some of the things that are going on, because I know I've had a couple of parishioners ask me questions and inquire. Don't ever be afraid to ask me questions, or if you want to inquire about things going on. First and foremost, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to the trees here in the park and around the Basilica, maybe not the oaks. The oaks, we might have to wait until fall for them, because I don't want them to be killed. But the trees are going to be trimmed. A couple of them are going to be taken down. And the ones over here by the parking lot are going to be taken down, because what's happening is that the roots are going underneath the parking lot. And as I promised, we are going to do the parking lot here very soon. I know you've been more than patient. I hope you have not lost an axle coming up here, because you know I go in the garage. I know that it's bad. So we're going to take care of that too very soon. So that's a project for this spring. Some of you have asked about the painting of the church. It's going to be painted, but that's going to be a little while yet. Last year, I took a couple of estimates just to get an idea in my head of what it would actually cost to paint the church. But there are a couple of things with the infrastructure. of the basilica that I want to check on and take care of first and foremost. Underneath the basilica are the heating pipes. Well, they're probably over 100 years old, like the wiring of this place as well. And so I want to take care of and have them look at those pipes if they have to be replaced. There's no use in painting. And you know, painting is something that you want to do when you're kind of like done with everything. And so there's no use in painting and beautifying if all this kind of infrastructure work still has to be done. And a couple of the pipes burst during this cold winter. And again, I'm happy that I did not pave the driveway and the parking lot because of the winter that we did have. So, but that's gonna also be, I wanna have maybe a contractor or whatever look at down in the basement for the infrastructure here to work on that and to see what actually has to be repaired and fixed and everything, because if we paint it, if I paint it, if we rewire it, I want everything done right, not piecemeal, you know, and I don't believe in doing things half, finish the word. So, that's just how I am, how I like to do things. So, if you have any questions in regards to that, please see me. And we also have to say a prayer of thanks. Monsignor Finnegan, it was his anniversary yesterday. And Father Klingler for the Basilica is the gift that keeps on giving. His generosity, his thrift, if you will, and with his stocks and everything, it's coming all through. And so hopefully we're going to be able to do the driveway and the parking lot and the trees thanks to his generosity. So our finance council has met, the parish council has met, they're all on board with all these repairs that have to go forward and go through, and it's like one thing at a time. And believe you me, I think, you know how I love stories, and you know the story of Hansel and Gretel? Instead of the stove and the wicked witch being thrown into the stove at the end of the story, I think it was a boiler. And so I think, you know, they can throw me into the boiler, because that boiler has been a thing of consternation for me since I've been here. So I want to have it all repaired and working. And so that's what we have to do. So it's everything as with the infrastructure here, it's a work in progress. So please be patient in regards to that. Now, God is a God of mercy and justice that we hear in our gospel, especially today. We know that life is not fair. And even though we know that life is not fair, even though we know this, we expect God to be fair, which may be what irks so many about the story of the parable of the lost son that we hear every year. We know the story in and out. We know the symbolism and everything. And it seems like the younger son was able to have his cake and eat it too, while the older son, faithful, would have to sit by and watch the missing out on the devil may care part of life. And it doesn't seem fair. And the older son sees that and he says it, and he says so. You know, the point of the story though is that, okay, God is both just and merciful. But sometimes, you know, looking at the story from God's perspective, divine mercy always trumps worldly justice. And we, however, think that that is not fair, because we grow suspect at things like deathbed conversions, worried that the person is trying to have it both ways, have his life and then just before they die, they try and make amends. But do we give thought to the suffering such a life without God might entail? You know, the humiliation and the near starvation of the younger son as he lived his self-indulgent life. We think that we want God to be fair, but do we really? In the novel, C.S. Lewis's novel, Till We Have Faces, one character asks another if the gods are just, which is replied, "O child, we pray that they are not. Do they really want to be treated with justice, getting exactly what we deserve and no more?" Think about that. Do we get exactly what we deserve and no more? That's justice. But what about mercy? Or do we want God to be God and to be treated with mercy? Go to 1994. There's another one of my favorite stories, The Lion King. I think we all know The Lion King, and some of the younger people here would know the movie from 1994. I love that particular movie, the animated one with James, the voices of James Earl Jones, Matthew Broderick, Jeremy Irons. Now, if we look at The Lion King, we see Hamlet. We see Hamlet, or we see Beauty and the Beast. You know, Shakespeare, they say, was a secret Catholic writer. That he kind of wrote some of his plays and things in code so that the queen couldn't figure out, or they couldn't figure out what he was writing. I had a wonderful priest in the seminary, Father Ed Mihawk. He died just a couple of years ago. He taught us English literature. And one thing that he taught us is look for the Christ figure in English literature. Look for the Christ figure. And in The Lion King, we have all that going on. We have Mustafa as God. He's the God figure. He's the father. And Simba, the lion cub, is like the younger son in a lot of ways in the story that we hear today. He runs away. He runs away. Simba runs away. And he causes even his father to be killed. His carelessness, you know, because he's a young cub. He's young. He doesn't know life. But then he meets the meerkat and the warthog. And the meerkat and the warthog, they teach him and say, live life as life comes. Live life as life comes. But then Simba, the young cub, finds out that his father and the spirit of his father, Mufasa, is still living within him. And the powerful scene in that movie, which is my favorite movie, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, is when he sees his reflection in the pool. And then he hears them as only James Earl Jones of happy memory could do. Remember who you are. And he says that. He says that to Simba. And maybe that's our call for Lent. Our call for Lent is to remember who we are. And then we know the end of the story, that Simba takes his place on the throne. That's the Christ figure. Simba is the Christ in The Lion King. Look around you, my dear friends, this Lent, and what do you see? What do you see? Today, let us offer prayers for our law enforcement. You know, last night must have been a tough night in the city, because I heard the sirens going almost all night. What do you see? What do you feel in our world today? What do you see when you are dealing with all the broken homes? when I'm dealing with a phone call from a mother who's in a shelter with her children, the children who go to our school, who go to our school, with all the fatherless children. What do we see when we're dealing with all this sexual confusion among people? The opioid crisis. The opiate crisis right here on this street. And right behind me as well. The skyrocketing rate of depression and increase of suicides. What do we feel? Do you feel compassion? Do you have the deep thoughts in your bones that only Jesus could enter into the lives of these people and make them better? I had a man come to me and say, "Father, I'm at my wit's end. I'm working with 65 people and they're all driving me nuts. They're driving me crazy. They can't get along with each other." And I said to him, "I'm a pastor of a church. I don't have 65 people that I work with. But this professional stirs that cause problems. And the good old Anglo-Saxon word that I love, we can't say it in church. It starts with the letter H and it ends with the letter T. And it's a good Anglo-Saxon word, but that we have those people in our lives, you know, that cause us consternation and problems. And sometimes we get off focus and let the Lord takes us off focus. That's the devil. That is just the devil during Lent that wants to take our attention away from God and doing good things. My brothers and sisters, look around you, my friends, and see what you see. Can you see the world through the eyes of Jesus? Yes, we can. Let your hearts be awakened. Let your hearts be awakened. Do we want to let God be God and to be treated with mercy? Now we must celebrate and rejoice because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. That's why Laetare, rejoice. I say, O Lord, rejoice. The rose-colored vestments that tells us the joy that's supposed to be the Lenten springtime. The joy of the already, but not quite yet. That we are to have this joy going to Jesus during this time of Lent with all of the practices that we do. How deep is my understanding of the scriptures today? Do I let this gospel sink in? You know, what is the connection of today's gospel for us today? Just how far does my own mercy and love extend? Whether it be to my family, to my spouse, to my neighbors around me, how do they extend more broadly? And am I able to rejoice when others are forgiven of their transgressions? That's the beautiful thing about the gospel today. The brother was angry. He didn't want to go in. But we hear though that he did go in. He did go in and hopefully, like his father, rejoiced that the lost brother came home. Can the Lord say and have the same mercy for you and for me? God bless you.